I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Republicans hold the floor in the income tax debate for nearly 20 hours plus. One lawmaker warns citizens in Washington state are dangerously close to throwing tea into Puget Sound. And businesses called out for supporting the homeless industrial complex. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback at the start of this live show. For nearly 20 hours straight, House Republicans have been forcing Democrats in Washington state to debate the income tax proposal. Now, they can't stop it from passing. Democrats have the votes. Democrats are absolutely going to pass the latest version of the income tax on quote-unquote millionaires, but Republicans can make life miserable for them in the process. And actually, miserable for themselves, too. I was in Olympia yesterday. We are awaiting a decision in our press pass case. I'll give you the latest coming up in a moment, but I think getting to the income tax thing is a little more important right now. And so after the hearing in federal court, I went down to Olympia, and the Republicans were getting ready for a long night. They were stocking their desks with sugar-free Red Bull. And it was funny because one of them told me that they almost used it as a prop. They had a couple cases of sugar-free Red Bull that were stacked out on the floor on one of their desks. And they said, we're going to drink this, but also we want Democrats to know that we will do this for as long as it takes. And so it's sort of warning Democrats that if you're going to push through this unconstitutional income tax, we're going to draw it out as long as we possibly can. And Republicans have some tools at their disposal. And it's not just about running the clock out. They're not able to run the clock out in this regard. But there was like 80 amendments. So there's an effort to try to make the bill better, right? Let's try to, if we can't stop it, let's try to improve it in any form or fashion. But also, they can force Democrats to vote on the record on every single amendment in a roll call capacity. So literally, Speaker of the House calls their name and they have to say yay or nay. There's a point to that. That matters. You know, when they're pushing forth amendments, you know, on trying to table it because it's too long and they haven't had time to read it, and Democrats say no, and each of them has to say no, 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 no. Well, then they're on the record, you know, having to actually say we support pushing through a massive upheaval of our state's tax system with very little notice when we haven't even all read the bill. So there's a purpose to what they're doing. If I had to guess, it's probably going to go on for a couple more hours and then Democrats in the House will pass it. But of all the debate that I've watched on it, and I didn't stay there all night, I will admit I did not stay there all night. I got home pretty late, but once it became clear that they were going to pull an all-nighter, I'm like, I'm not pulling an all-nighter. So I got up this morning early and started watching it again. But I got to say, out of all the stuff that I've seen so far, this speech on the floor from State Representative Matt Marshall, a Republican, is my favorite.
This is in direct violation of our Constitution. Not only did the voters pass an initiative just recently that banned a proposal just like this, I think it's disingenuous to then have a proposal like this claiming that there's support for democracy and then completely eliminate the citizens' ability to challenge this via referendum. The people have had enough. The people will voice it. And having this proposal where the people will not even get the chance to exercise their voice like they should via constitutional amendment to impose something like this, but via referendum, is an insult to the voters of Washington who are already fed up and are dangerously close to throwing tea into Puget Sound.
Love that. And I was up in the gallery because I don't have a press pass, so I can't be on the floor. And I was like, hell yeah. And look, again, I'm not suggesting we should have an armed rebellion against the government. But there is a point where, what do you do? What do you do when the government and these elected leaders are blatantly doing something that's against the Constitution? And they know it's against the Constitution. Monica Dingra said, this is unconstitutional. It's been ruled unconstitutional. So what do you do when the government is violating your rights, is violating your constitutional rights? Well, a reasonable person would say, well, there's the judicial branch for that. We take them to court. What do you do when the judicial branch allows the government to violate your constitutional rights? Then what's your recourse? You know, I mean, in Seattle, we'd probably throw coffee in the Puget Sound, not tea. But Starbucks is leaving, so there might not be any coffee left to throw in Puget Sound. But I just thought, you know, at some point, and I don't know what that looks like or what the line is, but when there's no recourse for citizens and even the checks and balances that our founding fathers set up for us aren't working, what do you do? Maybe that's an open-ended question to all of you. What is our recourse then? I think one of the most salient arguments, though, against, besides it just being blatantly unconstitutional, but clearly that doesn't really matter to the Democrats who are voting for it, one of the most salient arguments is just the argument that, is this the way we should govern? This is a short session, which means it's 2 months, and it's really designed for supplemental things, like little tweaks here and there, right? And yet they're using this short session to ram through the biggest change to our tax code in 100 years. Here's State Representative Travis Couture.
We received over 100-page striker, which is what we will be debating tonight on Friday. And we had less than 24 hours to conceive of, read that amendment, conceive of amendments, and then after that, 48 hours to draft those amendments until today. And we're considering now this generational seismic shift in tax policy, erasing over 90 years of precedents. And that's not what short sessions are for, Mr. Speaker. We shouldn't be doing it at all, but we shouldn't be doing it at the very end of the short session.
Yeah. And look, this happens all the time in government and Republicans, Democrats, Washington State, Washington, D.C. I mean, budget bills that are 1,000 pages long. You think anybody's read that? No, their party tells them how to vote. And by and large, they vote in line with their party. But when you're, again, making the biggest change in Washington state tax policy in 100 years, when it's something that could be the nail in the coffin of our state's economy, shouldn't you want time to read it? Shouldn't you want time to make proper changes, make amendments, really in good faith debate those amendments and not debate them in the middle of the night when no one is watching? But this is how our government works. It's how it works under one party rule. And one party rule, as I've said many times, isn't good for anyone, whether it's one political party and it's a red state or one political party and it's a blue state. Now, I do want to give, we talk about this all the time, positive reinforcement is a good thing. And there have been some Democrats, not all Democrats are going to vote for this thing. And there have been some Democrats who, even on the floor, surrounded by their colleagues, were introducing amendments overnight to try to make this bill better. And there were amendments from two Democrats on one specific issue to fix one glaring problem with the bill. And it's called basically a marriage penalty. So if you're a couple and you're married, you are going to be penalized with this millionaire's tax, income tax, more than two people who are cohabitating but not legally married are going to be penalized. So if you're making over $1 million a year as a couple, you're both, it's not a joint thing, right? So you're both going to be penalized. So if you're being fair, it should, if you're a married couple, it should be $2 million. If you're making over $2 million a year, then you should, you know, you'd be subject to the millionaire's tax. But instead, it's as a couple, if you're making over $1 million a year, all of a sudden now you're millionaires and you're taxed as millionaires under Washington state's tax code. So Amy Wallen, a Democrat, introduced an amendment trying to change that. So from $1 million if filing as an individual, and it would increase the language $2 million if filing jointly. That didn't work. Christine Reeves, also a Democrat, introduced an amendment on her own, and she tried to make it $1.5 million. So, okay, if you won't bite at $2 million, how about $1.5 million as a couple? And they both made that argument. And in fact, Christine Reeves said that the bill as it's structured and the tax as it's structured, she called it anti-woman. Now, this is the I had to laugh when I saw this. April Berg, who's a Democrat, was pushing back against those amendments from members of her own political party. Here's the argument that she made.
I will say that I've been saddened to listen to this debate and to listen to how marriage is simply a transaction, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm saddened to hear that it's not simply till death do you part, but till death thus changed the tax code. I thought marriage, at least in my tradition, Mr. Speaker, was a sacrament about love and about faith and about devotion. But I've been saddened, Mr. Speaker, as I'm sure you are, to hear that it's simply a about what the tax code is most beneficial, if we should be together, if we shouldn't be together. It's just, you know, let's vibe it out until the next tax code change. Mr. Speaker, I'm sad because of that. But Mr. Super Speaker, sad. I'm asking for a no, because I'm sure you, like me, think that marriage is a sacrament. It's based on love, trust, and faith, not what the tax code is.
She said, wow, it's just about vibing it out. I mean, now this was overnight, and maybe everybody's really tired by that point, but her argument is basically, oh, I thought marriage was about love, taxes and money. They don't factor into the equation at all. And actually, this is the subject of our daily subscriber show poll, which we'll get to later on, but make sure you take a chance to answer it. I'm sorry. For me, if it was, and I love my sweet husband, marriage is an absolute blessing, but if we were talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars that we would have to pay for the government, to the government, if we were going to get married versus not married, I'm sorry, we'd make a vow to each other and it would just be in our heart. It would absolutely not be on paper. So this continues to happen. But again, Democrats are going to pass the income tax. You know, I keep hoping that cooler heads will prevail and maybe there'll be so much backlash to Governor Bob Ferguson that he'll say, you know what, this just ain't worth it. But I think that we're heading in that direction. But Republicans are owed a lot of credit. They can't do much in the minority. But to draw this out for more than 20 hours, to force Democrats into this miserable situation where they have to justify every single line of this bill, I think is the only possible thing that they can do at this point. So we've talked a lot about bills that have been put forth that are just blatantly unconstitutional, and actions like this. It is just against the state constitution. And it's going to go to a court and all this stuff, but it is, none of them can say it's not, it's constitutional. It isn't. It's just unconstitutional. Another thing that we're seeing a lot of, and this is the consequence of one-party rule, are bills and proposals and laws that just straight up undermine democracy. So this is crazy. Senate Bill 6358. We haven't talked about this session yet. Why? Well, because it was just introduced yesterday. Now, you might say, well, Brandy, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Why would a bill be introduced yesterday when it's the last week of the legislative session? You're right. It doesn't make any sense unless it's strategic. So they can't hear new bills at this point in the session. Either they're already made it on, scheduled for a vote, or they're not. So it's like, what is this? Senate Bill 6358. It's introduced by a Democratic lawmaker, Senator Hasegawa. And it has to do with basically punishing corporations who take the wrong political positions. Let me read it to you. Upon the effective date of this section, all powers, privileges, and capacities previously granted to corporations under the law of this state are revoked in their entirety, and a corporation operating under the jurisdiction of this state shall possess only those powers, privileges, and capacities specifically granted by this title. The powers granted in this subsection do not grant any power to engage in ballot measure activity or election activity. A corporation organized under this title has no powers beyond those expressly granted. This chapter does not grant or recognize any power to engage in any election activity or ballot measure activity. Any act undertaken by a corporation that lies outside the powers granted in this title is void. A corporation that exercises a power not granted under this title forfeits all corporate privileges, including limited liability and perpetual duration. Let me read that again. An act undertaken by a corporation that lies outside the powers granted in this title forfeits all corporate privileges, including limited liability and perpetual duration. So in other words, if you're a corporation and you engage in ballot measure activity or election activity, you forfeit your right to be a company in the state of Washington. That's explicitly what it says. We are prohibiting corporations from engaging in ballot activity or election activity. And if they do, they are no longer recognized as a corporation in the state of Washington. We wipe them off the face of the earth. That is the most insane bill in 15 years ever introduced in the state of Washington. Punishing corporations for speech. It's obviously unconstitutional, violates a bunch of laws, obviously, in the Constitution. You can't punish any entity for its political speech. You can't punish a corporation for its political speech and for being engaged in the democratic process. But this is exactly what this bill does. Now, you might be saying, well, why would they, the bill isn't even a thing. They can't do anything with it this session. And in fact, Senator Jamie Peterson, we reached out to Senator Peterson, who's the Democrat in charge of the Washington State Senate. And we said, well, what's going on with this? You know, why introduce this? He said, thanks for the message. I cannot speak for why Senator Hasegawa introduced this bill. As long as the legislature is in session, each member has the right to introduce bills on any subject. However, under our state constitution, the legislature cannot consider any bill introduced in the final 10 days of the session, including this one. This bill is dead and will not be the subject of committee hearings, briefings, or floor action. Best wishes, Jamie. Now, Nicole also asked, is this something that will be considered next year? And he didn't respond to those questions. So you might say, okay, why do this? They're sending a message. This is about sending a message to corporations. Go against us, and you will be punished. Fall in line, or you will be punished. Washington Roundtable, which is an entity that comprises a lot of major businesses that has spoken out about bad tax policy, putting them on notice. Any corporation that dares speak out about this millionaire tax or supports, remember what's going to happen after this session. There's going to be an initiative to repeal the income tax. And that initiative will be funded in large part, I'm sure, by corporations and businesses, big and small. This is about warning them not to give money to such an effort. And this is as scary as it gets. But it is not out of the blue. It is not unusual. It's bad, but it's not unusual in the context of all the efforts that Washington State Democrats have made to punish people who step out of line and to undermine the democratic process, to put a check on anyone who dares go against the party in power and to further consolidate their power in Washington State. I was off the top of my head this morning, a few bills that explicitly undermine the democratic process. There were two bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, that would have attacked the initiative process, that would have made it more difficult to run successful initiatives. What other purpose does that serve than to undermine democracy and undermine the protections in our state constitution? Of course, Senate Bill 5974, which is heading to the governor's desk for his signature, it allows an unelected board of bureaucrats to remove a duly elected sheriff, thus undermining democracy. Senate Bill 6346, the millionaire's tax. Obviously, that undermines democracy in a couple key ways. First of all, it's blatantly unconstitutional. And how many times have voters in this state said we don't want an income tax? 11. Yet they're pushing it through anyway. So it's undermining democracy. And in a second way, they attached an emergency clause onto the end of it, which means that voters can't run a referendum. Again, undermining democracy. Senate Bill 5925, expanding the powers of the Attorney General. Powers that basically allow him carte blanche to dig into the lives and investigate anyone and demand documents and anything if he has a suspicion that you might be doing something unconstitutional. That goes far outside the scope of what voters elected him to do. And it also is blatantly unconstitutional. And then, of course, there's this bill, Senate Bill 6358. Which punishes corporations, would punish corporations, or at least send them for now a strong message that if you step outside and you support an initiative to repeal the income tax, we are coming from you and we will make sure that you cease to exist as a company. And this is the party that says Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. And they get away with it. And so many people run to fill out their ballots and vote for Democrats and say, oh, Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. Well, Democrats here seek to destroy our democracy. You're not allowed to vote for, support anything or any effort that doesn't help them, that doesn't put them in office. And as far as that Senate Bill 5925, expanding the powers of the Attorney General specifically to look into what he believes are violations of the state or federal constitution, hey, Nick Brown, walk over to the House right now. You'll find about 60 people who are very clearly engaged in an effort to violate our state constitution. House Democrats. And then when you're done there, walk on over to the Senate and talk to the Senate Democrats. So you want expanded powers to investigate people who you suspect are violating the state constitution. Meanwhile, you're going to ignore entire chambers full of people from your own political party who are out in the open admitting that they're violating our state constitution. Great stuff. Really can't make that up. All right, coming up next, more fallout when it comes to Seattle's bad business climate. Starbucks announcing it's closing multiple locations in Seattle. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord, I don't know why my shoulder hurts so bad.
Probably the
help
tension.
Help me. The tension.
Being so annoyed by the other media yesterday.
Yes, I've just thrown my shoulder out with rage and anger. Anyway, maybe I should get a massage later. That would be nice.
There you
I'm overdue
you
for
deserve
one.
Deserve it.
Thanks, Nicole. Are you going to pay for it?
I'll put it on the company card.
Okay, gotcha. If you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, RHAWA.org. RHAWA.org. It is Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. And even if you've just got one rental unit, you're thinking, do I need to be a member of RHA? Yeah, you do. Because if you got one rental unit and you end up with a squatter in it, well, yeah, then you're kind of screwed. And RHA can help you navigate these complex times that we're in. So they're in your corner. And then right now down in Olympia, they also are in your corner trying to advocate against bad housing policy and for good housing policy, to the best of their ability, of course, because Democrats often are just unflappable in their lack of common sense. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org to become a member, Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers, and make sure you look at their schedule of events, too. They always have events happening across the state. All right, Starbucks, just days after they announced that they're moving or opening a second HQ in Tennessee. They're also announcing they're closing multiple stores. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, this from Como News. Five Starbucks stores in Seattle set to close, including a very busy location, their Armory location. And this is just the latest round of closures. We've been talking about individual closures of Starbucks locations. I mean, some of their biggest locations in downtown Seattle, like the one across from Westlake Park, I mean, that closed months and months and months ago over crime and substance abuse issues around there. It says Starbucks plans to close five stores in Seattle in a matter of weeks, including four unionized locations, escalating tensions between the company and some workers in its hometown. The union confirmed that the affected unionized locations are on Madison Street, University Way, the Seattle Center Armory locations. So that's one actually in the Armory at the Seattle Center. And then the one at Seattle Children's, a fifth non-unionized location, will also close, the company confirmed, and that's on Minor Avenue. Now, look. First of all, there are places in Seattle where you can stand on one street corner and spot five Starbucks stores. I don't think that's really necessary. So maybe some of these decisions are like, we don't actually need a Starbucks on every corner. I think also there are some crime issues that are related that have resulted in Starbucks stores closing before. But also, you know what? Yeah, I think they are closing them down because they're union shops. And you know what? I'm fine with that. I think that's great. I mean, honestly, like, am I in favor of union busting? Maybe I am. But at the end of the day, you've had these whiny baristas out there who get paid more than $20 an hour, who can get access to tremendous benefits on day one in some instances, who can get college paid for. And they're out there with their nose rings and their pink hair protesting because Starbucks is making them wear black T-shirts. I mean, it's absolutely unreal. And this isn't a surprise. I mean, we played this clip on the show a couple days ago. The brand new mayor of Seattle, Katie Wilson, a socialist, a couple days after she was elected, what was she doing? Protesting Starbucks.
I'm proud to say, loud and clear, I am not buying Starbucks, and you should not either.
Okay, well, then we'll close some stores. Great, we'll close stores then.
I would like to close with a message to Starbucks. This is your hometown and mine.
No, it's not your hometown.
Right now. And I urge you to do the right thing. Because in Seattle, when workers' rights are under attack, what do?
First of all, I've never noticed it. We played that clip a million times. She says, this is my hometown. That's not your hometown. That was like a huge part of the campaign, that you were just an interloper from New York. Your parents were there and you just wound up in Seattle because you and your rich husband just trotted across the country and decided, oh, we got to the end of it. We might as well stay here.
She defines home differently, hometown differently.
No, she identifies as a Seattleite. Uh-huh. And look, I'm not from Washington State. I'm from Minnesota, but I am a Washingtonian. So I'm not one of those people that believes that you can never, ever be considered a Washingtonian if you've lived here long enough. No, by all means. But this isn't my hometown. That's just a lie. But the other part is she's out there telling people, don't buy Starbucks. Okay, well, what happens when you don't buy Starbucks and people don't buy Starbucks? Well, the business doesn't do as well. And maybe there's some locations that are underperforming. And then those locations close down. And then what happens to the union workers who you're out there rallying for? Well, now they're going to lose their jobs entirely. And I bet you what? They would much rather be employed for a company like Starbucks even than be unemployed, I imagine. And it's just like, gosh, this stuff isn't really difficult. And of course, it comes after Starbucks announced that they're opening up an HQ in Tennessee because of the pro-tax climate. And I don't think they're going to have two HQs. Before long, the Seattle HQ will go away or dramatically downsize, and Tennessee will be their main HQ. There was an article today in the Tennessean, why Starbucks and other Fortune 500 companies choose Nashville and Middle Tennessee. Well, I don't think I need to read the Tennessean to know that, but let's just see what the Tennessean is saying. It says the primary credit for Starbucks and all these companies moving over, the job tax credit provides companies for attracting them. They have a job tax credit providing companies a credit of $4,500 for every new high-paying job created. Oh my God. Okay, hold on a second. So in Tennessee, they provide these companies a credit for of $4,500 for every new high-paying job created. In Seattle, they tax companies for high-paying jobs. It's called the Jumpstart Tax. Gee, where is more advantageous for us to have an HQ? Says they also provide an enhanced job tax credit for companies who create new jobs or expand their operations into lower income and rural areas. Eligibility for these breaks is contingent upon the number of jobs created, the wage of those jobs, and companies' investment into qualified businesses. You see this? Incentivizing, not punishing. Seattle and Washington State Democrats believe they can punish corporations into doing what they think is the right thing. And in states like Tennessee, they're offering incentives. Do business here. Additionally, the state offers an industrial machinery tax credit of up to 10% for the third-party purchasing, repair, or installation of manufacturing, distribution, and tech equipment. Manufacturers, headquarters, call centers, warehouses, data centers, and research and development businesses can also be eligible for the sales and use tax exemptions, so long as they meet the specific investment, employment, and utilities use requirements. So you bring an HQ here, tax credit for you. Tax incentive for you. Gee, I wonder why Starbucks made this decision. And then it says, arguably, the most alluring element that attracts big businesses to Tennessee is its lack of a state income tax, which Washington State will soon no longer be a state without an income tax. This allows businesses to earn more and invest a larger portion of their revenue back into internal operations, such as hiring, expansion, and general production. Furthermore, employees get to walk away with more of their paycheck. Weird how that works. Weird. Nashville has attracted Oracle and Amazon in the last 8 years, as well as AllianceBernstein, BGE Inc., and In-N-Out Burger, which is currently building a new 100,000 square foot office in Franklin. This stuff matters. And it's about punishing versus offering incentives. You will never be able to punish businesses into growing your state's economy. Never. It'll never work. It never has. But states like Florida and Tennessee and Texas understand the benefit of these businesses, the economic growth and the revenue that it brings. And so they will lay out the red carpet and do anything they can to get the businesses that we're crapping on to come there. And they're doing a pretty good job. It's not rocket science. If I was trying to destroy an economy, I would do exactly what Washington State Democrats are doing right now. I would do exactly what Seattle socialist mayor is doing right now. It would be the roadmap for me for destroying an economy from the ground up. Absolutely insane. Also, just a quick note, and I don't know if this has anything to do with the Starbucks thing, but remember, Washington State right now has a law on the books that allows striking workers to get unemployment benefits. And that's just another reason why businesses don't want to do business here. So you're saying my employees can strike and the one incentive they have to come back, not getting paid, now the state has taken that away and now they can access the unemployment system. It says another reason businesses don't want to do business here. And I don't know if any Starbucks workers necessarily have taken advantage of it, but the Washington Policy Center put this out. They say 106 striking workers are already using unemployment insurance benefits. And that, I mean, that just 106, it doesn't sound like a lot, but we're only 2 months and a week into that benefit even being offered, which means they're like, I'm taking advantage of that immediately. So Washington Policy Center says the Employment Security Department confirms 106 striking workers have been paid 415 weeks of unemployment insurance benefits. Think of how much money that is out of the unemployment insurance fund. 415 weeks by 106 striking workers. Well, ESD told the Policy Center it cannot reveal any other information about the claims or employers. They do note that Teamsters Local 760 began an open-ended strike on January 17th at MultiCare in Yakima. The union represents 168 technical employees, including staff in surgery, radiology, MRI, pharmacy, etc. So that could certainly be, those could be the people who are taking advantage of this pay for striking workers. And it also says workers involved in that strike would have become eligible for the UI benefits that they have been encouraged to take around February 1st. So if you do the math, it sounds like that's probably the workers who are getting those unemployment benefits. But just another reason why it pays to do business elsewhere. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. There's only a few days left in the legislative session, but still plenty of opportunities to get involved and make your voice heard. So sign up for their newsletter at future42.org to be alerted to those opportunities. All right. Some businesses, so we talked about that law earlier, the bill that was introduced, not a law, a bill that was introduced that would punish businesses for their political speech. The next segment, we're going to talk about some businesses who are being called out, maybe not punished, but called out for their political speech. And I have to wonder if you guys think it's appropriate to do so. But first, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com is the guy you should call if you're thinking about selling your home. Preston Turk, who is an undivided viewer and listener, says he decided to reach out to Wes Jones when it came time to sell their home. And he said things went better than he even thought they would.
We had tons of showings. We had three offers in one day. So kind of got a little bit of a bidding war. One came over asking, went with that one. I actually had said that I'm kind of a cheapskate, so I've never been a member. So I said if Wes gets me over asking, I'll become a member. So I became a member.
Oh, because Wes got you over asking? Wow. Love it. So he had to become a member of Undivided because he made a bet that if Wes got him over asking. I love that stuff. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. I would start by checking out his Listing Boost Concierge service. And you go to your website, type in your address, and it'll give you kind of an estimate of what your home might be worth. And then Wes will give you a market analysis to give you sort of a more detailed outlook. And then he can talk about the things they offer, like their Listing Boost Concierge service and their pre-listing inspections, all of that. It just leads to better outcomes for his clients. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, let's talk about Plymouth Housing, a major player in the homeless industrial complex in Washington State. And there's a lot of these people who offer these low-income housing units. They get subsidized by the government. They also get some private donations. And these things just turn into de facto drug dens. This is our friend Jonathan Cho and Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle recently. They visited a Seattle Plymouth housing unit complex.
Matzik recently invited us over as he smoked fentanyl with his friends.
Oh, my God.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Mike, who's in your room?
Oh, my God.
Drug use inside the rooms are a regular occurrence.
And this unit is a trap house. Mm-hmm. This is a garbage can full of foil.
Oh, my God.
Drugs, revolving door.
So does the staff here at Plymouth Housing, do they let you guys do drugs in here?
They don't say no, but they don't, you know.
It's legal. This is a harm reduction.
This is harm reduction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they provide, you know, the paraphernalia, like the pipes and...
They give you the pipes downstairs.
Needles or whatever, yeah.
That's insane. People who run buildings like that should be ostracized from society. They shouldn't get a dime of taxpayer funds, and they surely shouldn't get a dime of private funds. I mean, I'm not going to tell private entities what to do with their money, but does that seem like something you want to support? They basically just collect millions and millions of dollars, part of the homeless industrial complex, and then they claim they're doing something good for homeless people by taking them off the streets, and then they send them into those units where they just do drugs and die anyway. And the unit, the apartment buildings are a blight on whatever city they end up in. But that doesn't stop Plymouth Housing from continuing to get mainstream support and continue to be held up in places like Seattle as some wonderful organization. So Jonathan Cho sent out a post over the weekend. Seattle Dances raised more than $1.5 million for Plymouth Housing, a controversial nonprofit claiming to be solving homelessness. Organizers even managed to rope in local journalists as celebrities to push their agenda. He said, I noticed a local TV anchor and reporter participating in this fundraiser. Now I know why King 5 and Northwest News Radio never do investigative stories on all the problems at these permanent supportive housing buildings. It would be a conflict of their interests. They're literally funding it. And so you have these quote unquote celebrities who are in this, like, I think it's, is it copying the, what's the big
Dancing
with the Stars sort of thing. And you've got some like Seattle TV people, it looks like, who are part of it. And they raised $1.5 million for Plymouth Housing. For what? To give them, to help them act like they're doing something wonderful and putting people in these units where they die in filth and squalor? I would be mortified to have my name attached to that. Mortified. But of course, they're scratching the itch of anyone in news. Oh, I want to feel important and famous. And oh, you're going to have me be a celebrity dancer. I'm going to do that. I don't care what the money is going to. But perhaps a bigger issue are the businesses that are supporting Plymouth Housing and organizations like it. Andrea Suarez posted this. I'm curious as to why deep pocket donors don't put pressure on Plymouth Housing to stop housing fentanyl dealers and handing out drug use paraphernalia. They run neo-sweep apartments where anything goes. No reciprocity of behaviors in exchange for free forever housing. People are carried out of their facilities in body bags, yet the wealthy empty their wallets for this organization instead of putting pressure on them to reform their policies. These policies kill people and amp up criminal behavior in every city where they're located across our region. If you went to their Seattle Dances Gala on Saturday and gave them money, I ask why you don't put pressure on them to change their ways. They're killing people with their permissiveness and hurting our cities. Please help instead of just writing a check. And she wrote, or she took a screenshot of some of the companies. And I'm even surprised. Nordstrom is their presenting sponsor. I don't even want to know how much that costs. Most or you know events like this, a presenting sponsor is like $30,000, something like that. Nordstrom's, what the hell are you doing? You're right in downtown Seattle. You have watched the city crumble around you. And you're supporting an entity that just collects money, to uses your money to provide people with housing like that, just de facto drug den? Let's see the other businesses. PNC, BECU, Fulcrum Capital, Microsoft, shame on you, Microsoft, Perkins Coie, not a surprise there. See if there's other ones that we know about. Heritage Bank, well, Washington Trust Bank, Charlie's Produce, Seattle Magazine. Yeah, Alaska and Alaska Airlines. Premier airline sponsor, Alaska. What are
you
doing?
That is so disappointing.
That is so disappointing. And look, we talked about that bill earlier with Democrats trying to punish companies that don't align with their ideology. Well, gosh, maybe this is why they do this. They're so scared of Democrats. They're so scared of running afoul of the party in power, they'll just support anything they do. Take our money. You think any one of those organizations, if I held an event tomorrow, like to help We Heart Seattle, you think any one of those organizations would support it? Oh, I can't be tied to Brandy. She has controversial opinions. Yeah, no, I there's nothing I do or say that's more controversial than shoving people in a tiny apartment to die in filth and squalor. That's about as controversial as it gets. Yet they're like, take my money, take my money, take my money. That's genuinely horrifying. And for any of those businesses that have to close down or whatever it is over the drug crisis and the homeless crisis, I mean, I don't feel bad for you anymore. Nordstrom might say, well, you know, it's better to have them in those apartment units than out in front of our storefront on Third Avenue. And I get that to a certain extent. But like whether they die in your alcove or they die in that apartment, they're still dying. Plymouth Housing isn't doing anything to improve their circumstances, not in the slightest. And meanwhile, we have this bill that has now passed, right, Nicole? It's waiting for the governor to sign it. House Bill 2266, and this is the bill, we talked about it previously on the show, that has to do with expanding this permanent, quote-unquote, supportive housing. So this is the F you Donald Trump bill, because Donald Trump put out that executive order saying housing first is a failure, which it is. And we're going to try to defund cities and entities that continue to double, triple down on housing first. So what did Washington State do? We're going to double, triple down on housing first. And then we're going to punish cities that step out of line. So it said under this bill, nothing in it allows a county or city to limit indoor emergency shelters and indoor emergency housing in a manner where the capacity of indoor emergency shelters and indoor emergency housing is insufficient to meet blah, 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 blah. So it basically is like trying to tie the hands of cities in how they deal with the homeless crisis. And it's trying to make sure that they continue to push people into apartments like Plymouth Housing, because they Plymouth Housing wants all this money. So it's basically about doubling down on failed Housing First, because Housing First doesn't work. You got to get people help for their substance abuse and their mental health issues. And you have to make sure that their placement in an apartment like Plymouth Housing offers is contingent on them getting help for the underlying reasons that they were homeless in the first place. But Democrats don't want to do that. So they're not only doubling down on Housing First, but they're trying to make sure that every other city and county has to respond to homelessness like Seattle responds to homelessness. And no matter if you're in a red area that doesn't want to tolerate that level of homelessness, it doesn't matter at all. It's just absolutely insane. All right, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. We have so many wonderful First Mark Insurance success stories. And I think if you're looking to save your family money, you know, just take a closer look at your budget. Trying to save money on insurance is a really good way to start. And First Mark Insurance does personal insurance. They can also help with your business as well. We use First Mark for Undivided. We've saved a lot of money in the process. In fact, I just got a nice email from them. Hey, checking in, Brandy, how's everything going? We got some renewals coming up. Has everything worked to your liking? And I just love that aspect. It really just feels like you have a family friend helping you with your insurance. But I don't know if I have any family friends who would be good at insurance. So it feels like you have a very, very expert family friend helping you with your insurance. Robin, Carol, Debbie, Connie, all members of the First Mark family, Undivided viewers who became members of the First Mark family and are saving thousands of dollars a year. So take the First Mark challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, a little national news. The coverage of the terror attack in New York City outside Gracie Mansion, I don't think it's gotten any better. You know, we did a story on it yesterday with, you know, all the initial headlines suggesting it was the right wingers who, you know, had this explosive device, not clarifying it was like radical ISIS inspired terrorists. So CNN actually had to apologize for something, but even their apology missed the mark. So CNN put out this tweet. Two Pennsylvania teenagers crossed into New York City Saturday morning for what could have been a normal day enjoying the city during abnormally warm weather. But in less than an hour, their lives would drastically change, as the pair would be arrested for throwing homemade bombs during an anti-Muslim protest outside of Mayor Zohran Mamdani's home. Okay, where do I even start with that? First of all, why the weather thing? Like, that is the strangest. It was a cold and chilly day, and then before the terror attack. It's so strange. And then when they say their lives would drastically change, okay, they tried to kill people, so I don't care if I don't know if I care whether their lives would drastically change. It sounds like something's happening to them, right? As the pair would be arrested for throwing homemade bombs during an anti-Muslim protest. That makes it seem like it's the anti-Muslim people who threw homemade bombs, which of course it wasn't. And maybe it's no surprise that the reporter who put that out, Taylor Romein, is a they-them. Or at least at one point was a they-them. I read somewhere that maybe she doesn't use they-them pronouns anymore. But that is the kind of tweet and article that I would expect a they-them identifying reporter to put out. Now, CNN ended up taking the tweet down. Here's what they said about it. A post regarding the two individuals arrested for throwing homemade bombs outside of New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani's home failed to reflect the gravity of the incident, thereby breaching the editorial standards we require for all of our reporting. It has therefore been deleted. Okay, I understand that it did fail to reflect the gravity of the incident with all that flowery language about the weather, but it also failed to properly identify who threw the bombs. That it wasn't the anti-Muslim. That's the worst part of it, is if it were the right wingers, every story would make it crystal freaking clear who threw the bomb. It would never be in question. It would never be that gray. But when it's the ISIS-inspired terrorists who threw the bombs and tried to kill cops, oh, all of a sudden, I read this funny, funny post. Gosh, I should have pulled it up. Hold on a second. Oh, whenever, it's from some guy named Charles Cook on X. Whenever the topic is something the media doesn't like, journalists all of a sudden become creative writing professors. Yeah, it's like, we can't just say what happened. We have to sort of muddy the waters with just lots of words and flowery language. It's absolutely disgusting. And as I said, I mean, I thought the media would get better after Donald Trump won re-election and think, gosh, you know, we weren't on the right side of this, or maybe many Americans disagree with us, and we need to really start to take into consideration that part of the American population. No, they don't care. They're tripling down on all of it. All right, let's go to Florida, even though we usually wait till Thursday to do that. So the current attorney general in Florida just signed a directive announcing that all vaccine mandates there, all of them, will be lifted in the state.
The Florida Department of Health, in partnership with the governor, is going to be working to end all vaccine mandates in Florida law. All of them. All of them. All of them.
In case it wasn't clear.
Every last one of them.
All of them. How many other ways can we say that?
Every last one of them. Every last one of them is wrong and drips with disdain and slavery.
Slavery?
Who am I as a government or anyone else, or who am I as a man standing here now to tell you what you should put in your body? Who am I to tell you what your child should put in your body? I don't have that right.
But I agree with him.
Your body is a gift from God. What you put into your body is because of your relationship with your body and your God.
Okay, a little dramatic for my liking, but I agree with him in terms of the state can make, you know, recommendations and all of this. And look, I don't believe Florida had a ton of vaccine mandates, actually mandated vaccines. I think a lot of it is symbolic about, like, we're never revisiting this period of time. You know, what happened with the COVID vaccines, even though Florida didn't, you know, to the extent that Washington State, you know, try to thrust those upon the populace, like, we are going to make clear that, you know, you can have all the scientific information, but at the end of the day, it's your decision what you put into your body. So something very different happening, of course, in Washington State. Governor Bob Ferguson putting this out: we are not standing by and leaving ourselves at the mercy of the federal government's chaotic, politicized, and unscientific policies. Yesterday, I signed a bill with Insurance Commissioner Kuderer to give Washington State decision-making authority on what vaccines to recommend. So in Washington State, basically, now the state is going to have the power, whatever the CDC says, essentially doesn't matter anymore. It's whatever Washington State says goes. So he's talking about Senate Bill 2242. It authorizes the State Department of Health to make the vaccine recommendations and then requires, and this is the big part, requires health insurance plans to cover those recommendations. So if the state of Washington recommends something, health insurers have no choice but to cover those recommendations. Last week, Bob celebrated the bill coming to his desk with a press release. He said, quote, Donald Trump's CDC has become a political tool that increasingly peddles ideology instead of science. I know another tool. We must protect Washingtonians' health from the chaos of the federal government. These are important services for people who choose to use them, said the insurance commissioner. This bill ensures that the recommendations will continue to come from trained medical experts rather than political appointees with no background in medicine or science. The legislation will preserve health plan coverage for DOH-recommended vaccines and freeze coverage for federal preventative service recommendations. Okay, hold on a second. This legislation will preserve health plan coverage for DOH-recommended vaccines and freeze coverage for federal preventative service recommendations. I assume by freeze they mean maintain, like, and no new changes under Trump, but I have to look into more of what they mean by freeze, because freeze can also mean stop.
Either way, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yes. But for I continue to go back to this. It was my same thoughts with the International Women's Day post. When Governor Ferguson says we're not standing by and leaving ourselves at the mercy of the federal government's chaotic, politicized, and unscientific policies, okay, what's a woman? You can't even define what a woman is, and you continue to support the gender mutilation of children and defend it in a court of law, literally challenge the federal government's efforts to stop child mutilation, despite all the science shifting, and you still stand by that. So who's being unscientific, really? And this law that the governor is bragging about, it doesn't, like, expand mandated. It has nothing to do with vaccine mandates, which is what's happening in Florida, saying we'll never mandate another vaccine again. Which also, you know, never say never, because who only knows what can come up, right? But I tend to agree with, like, if you
if you want to die, like, let's say there actually is something that, like, seriously is going to kill you and there's a vaccine, I don't think the government should be able to mandate the vaccine, because, like, if you want to die, you can die. But with Washington State, if there was a COVID outbreak tomorrow, 100% Governor Ferguson would mandate a vaccine again. I don't think the state of Washington learned anything at all from the failed vaccine mandates of the COVID era. Not one bit. And they know better. They know science. We'll get to our subscriber poll coming up next. Comments from the live stream. First, could the future of AI impact your retirement? Are you overwhelmed with all the noise from AI, crypto, tech? Is your portfolio positioned to cut through that noise? Join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his free live webinar April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Bulwark Capital has a full schedule for the webinar to help you cut through the market noise. And the real fundamentals of value investing is what they're going to talk about. Plus, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. It's totally free. Register at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. You can also schedule your own if you can't make it to the webinar. You can do an individual Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, in our daily subscriber only show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, I want to ask you guys about this, given the weird argument against getting rid of the marriage penalty and the income tax thing. Like, is there any way you can go back to that April Berg cut before we get to the show poll? Sorry, give me a second, because I feel like we have to play it again in the context of this poll.
I will say that I've been saddened to listen to this debate and to listen to how marriage is simply a transaction, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm saddened to hear that it's not simply till death do you part, but till death thus change the tax code. I thought marriage, at least in my tradition, Mr. Speaker, was a sacrament about love and about faith and about devotion. But I've been saddened, Mr. Speaker, as I'm sure you are, to hear that it's simply about what the tax code is most beneficial, if we should be together, if we shouldn't be together. It's just, you know, let's vibe it out until the next tax code change. Mr. Speaker, I'm sad because of that. But Mr. Speaker, I am asking for a no, because I'm sure you, like me, think that marriage is a sacrament. It's based on love, trust, and faith, not what the tax code is.
Yeah. So in the Daily Subscriber Show poll, I asked you guys, regardless of what your marital status is now, would tax considerations play a role in whether you get married? 26% of you said yes. 74% said no.
Really?
Yeah. Well, and I think I get that for the most part, because if you're sort of an average income family, it might not actually make that big of a difference. But if you are going to be punished, like with this income tax, right, or the millionaire's tax, you might think twice about it.
Yeah. I would think that's kind of implied. So if it's not going to affect me financially, having to pay like the millionaire's tax or whatever, then I would not worry about it. Mm-hmm. However, if it was, I would just go to Canada and get married and then not be
married. Well, I would just be like, hey, we're married.
Yeah.
If you leave me, I'll bury you in the backyard.
What would be
the
point? I'm not giving the government money just to get married.
Yeah. Kim says, another way to destroy the nuclear family. Uh-huh. Sunfishka says, in this state, yes. So I would have to move and get married somewhere else, obviously. Spencer, it would be much easier to relocate, find another job, than try to divorce and escape taxes. Well, that's why I asked you, regardless of what your status is now. Like, if, let's just say you were unmarried and about to get married, what is the decision you would make in this moment? Let's see. Y said, I am married and always wanted to be married, so tax situation probably wouldn't have changed that. But if I were in tune with Washington politics and tax when I was younger, I probably wouldn't have minded expanding my search to other states so I could leave too. Sherry said, I say no with regard to federal taxes, but with a new millionaire's tax in Washington, if my spouse and I made more than $500,000 each, it would be a big consideration. All right, we do have a ruling from a federal judge in our free press lawsuit. I haven't had a chance to read it in full because I've been sitting here, but our motion has been denied. Now, that's not the end of the case, and I kind of had said I thought that the fact that he was taking so long when we need the press passes urgently because there's just a couple days left in this session didn't seem to bode well, and maybe he didn't want to intervene at this stage. And so the federal judge has denied our motion to be given press passes for the final days of the legislative session. I obviously disagree with that wholeheartedly. And as evidenced by my trip to Olympia last night, having or not having a press pass, it does matter. It puts me at a disadvantage to other reporters who are able to gather more information, watch debate from a different place, have something as basic as a place to work. I'm upset by it, but I'm less upset at the judge. I'm less upset at the state, and I'm more upset at the reporters and the legacy news reporters who are either sitting back and watching it happen and not saying anything, or who are actively supporting the effort to keep us from getting press passes. Out of some animosity or dislike, out of political bias, out of self-preservation, or out of allegiance to the Democratic Party, I don't know what it is. But we can't be in a place where the government can deny people press passes based on them espousing a political opinion. That's not what the First Amendment was made for. The First Amendment was meant to protect people in that moment who were fighting the monarchy with their words. With their words. And it wasn't about, you know, protecting people who were towing the party line, because frankly, in Washington State, they don't need protection. I still think they're owed it. I still think they should have it. But really, the First Amendment in this country was born out of a need to protect the pamphleteers and people who were actively trying to get other citizens organized to break from the monarchy. And so now, all of a sudden, all these years later, the 250th anniversary of our nation, we have this fundamentally different understanding of what the free press is. When did that happen? Why did that happen? I have just as much a right to be down there in Olympia as a member of the press representing all of you than a reporter from the Seattle Times does. And it's actually a scary thing to have a federal judge, at least at this juncture, say, no, you don't. And I thought yesterday, there's no way he'll deny it. Because is he going to sit there and be the arbiter of who is press and who isn't? Now, at the hearing, one of the things that kept coming up in terms of case law is what is considered a public forum and kind of a limited public forum and a non-public forum. And so that sort of matters in terms of case law, that if you consider the floor of the House a non-public forum because the public can't just walk in and out, then the state has more right to limit it in the way they see fit. So I don't think that this is the judge really deciding long term whether the rules that the state has put forth are arbitrary or are appropriate. And again, it's not just me impacted by this. It's Jonathan Cho. It's Ari Hoffman. We were all denied. So we'll convene with our attorneys. We'll decide for the time being what the best path forward is. But for this session, it's done. I mean, we can't cover it in the way that we need to cover it. And this judge isn't going to intervene in that regard. And so maybe we're in for a protracted legal battle. But at some point, this issue has to be heard by probably the Supreme Court. It doesn't have to be our lawsuit per se. But there's all these issues. I mean, look at the federal level and President Trump, you know, and he's tried to limit the Associated Press and he's tried to limit other reporters. And I've spoken out about all of that because I think it's a slippery slope. I mean, you always have to look at those powers utilized by somebody who you disagree with or who disagrees with you. And so to me, more access, more eyes on the government, open government is always going to be better. And this is a federal judge saying, at least for the time being, maybe not. So that's some scary stuff. So I'll digest the ruling and we'll talk a little bit more about it in depth tomorrow. All right. Some comments from the live stream on the very long income tax debate in the House. Merwin Wren says, we shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. Well, it might come down to that, because honestly, all the unconstitutional stuff, undermining our democracy, blocking your voice and eyes and ears in Olympia from being there. Are we not living in a dictatorship? Are we not in a tyranny? And what does it look like to fight back against that? As I said at the beginning of the show, you know, when the government undermines your constitutional rights, you can go to the courts in a civilized society in the United States of America. But when the courts undermine your constitutional rights, what recourse do you have left? Late Night with Tina. Washington State does not care if the people outside of the I-5 corridor can pay their bills and just keep taxing at an unsustainable rate. Yeah. Robert Jones. Hey, Bob, if you ignore the Washington voters, we will ignore you come election day. Are you really that stupid? But that's the thing is, will you, though?
Yeah, I know.
A lot of conservatives don't even vote. Republicans don't even vote because they've been led to believe their vote won't matter. And more people voted for Bob than Dave Ryker. That's just the truth. So you either have to get a candidate who might have a better chance of winning, or you have to get people who aren't voting to vote, or you have to change hearts and minds. Let's see. Old Sub Sailor with a $20 super chat. Undermining democracy is the goal of the socialist left. They will not give up control of the state and are creating legislation to protect themselves. They are destroying this state so they can build back a socialist mecca, which a socialism can never have a mecca. Crafty Grandma Crispy, does this mean that as an officer of the Corps, I personally cannot gather signatures for initiatives as an officer of a corporation? Well, if it were to pass, then your corporation would be punished, yes. I think it might mean, though, it's not constitutional. I don't think they'll ever be able to pass it. But I think it would mean if the corporation takes a position or donates to a ballot measure or an initiative. Let's see. Ken, the reason Democrats want to be able to control and remove duly elected sheriffs is because that's the one person with the authority to arrest government officials that refuse to protect and defend the Constitution. On our free press case, which we now know did not go in our favor, at least for the temporary injunction, Papa Woody, Brandy's Fight Against the Machine Fund. $5. I appreciate it. Sauce says, I'm in. $5. We also got a little donation to this fund from Brother Abe and Big Princess. God, your guys' screen names are the best. Kathy, is the lawsuit by Brandy, Ari, and Jonathan only good for this session? If so, what will happen next session? Will she have to do a lawsuit each session? So that's a good question. But generally speaking, if we decide to proceed, it would be challenging the rules themselves, mm-hmm. not challenging how the rules are applied or how the process is carried out. I believe the rules need to be updated. And I've been reasonable about this. I don't know that it should be a free-for-all. And it is a challenging thing to decide who is press and who isn't press. They're really stuck on this word journalist. Oh, you have to be a journalist. Okay. Well, what is a journalist? And there's many other types of members of the press than just journalists. And I would argue a lot of the mainstream reporters aren't journalists either. But to me, it always comes down to, can you behave yourself? It's worked fine in the Senate. The Senate doesn't have these same restrictions. We're not suing the Senate. The Senate basically says, if you are a self-described member of the press, come on in, apply for a press pass, it's good for the day, and just abide by the rules of decorum.
That's what they say now, but this...
Right, but it's worked out just fine in the Senate. And there haven't been any sort of crazy, crazed people taken to the floor in the Senate and violating the press rules. No, it's been people who want to go down for a day because maybe there's a bill they're interested in covering. Maybe they have a very narrowly focused blog or something like that. And there's a bill that's relevant to it. They should be able to go down, even if it's just once during the session, for something that they're interested in. Let's see. So I don't know. I don't know. I haven't read the ruling in full. I've been sitting here live. So Necro Two Shoes, biased media is controlled by the state, tax and financial decisions controlled by the state, legislation controlled by the state, law enforcement. When is this not tyranny? On Starbucks, definitely bailing on Seattle. Karen Taylor said, when a Seattle company starts closing stores down, that's definitely sending a message to other companies to not come here or open more stores. Rick, Undivided with Brandy Cruz, you all need to read the guest column in the Kitsap Sun from Greg Nance about his bill being tanked by Senator Marco Leas. Okay, we'll check that out. I don't know what it is, but we'll give it a go. We'll give it a read.
We'll do.
All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next, which I might totally throw out the window in favor of something else that's on my mind. Who knows? Nicole's like, well, great to know, Brandy. You'll be fine. March is the start of spring. And if you're like me, your outdoor to-do list, I already talked to my husband. I said, do we need a landscaper or something? Because, man, our grass is looking rough. But you know what else is also looking rough? The side of our house. It looks filthy dirty. I have to take Lucky out this side door at our house. The garage, you know, every garage has like a side door. Because she can walk, but she needs to be on a leash because she had that surgery. I don't even want to touch the door. That side garage door outside of it is literally filthy dirty. And I'm like, spray this thing down. But instead, I'm just going to call my friends at Valentine Roofing and have them do it. No offense to my husband. He's very busy. He does a lot of wonderful things. But using the pressure washer I got him from Costco doesn't seem to be one of those things. But that's okay. Wow. That was kind of a mean rant. I love you, husband. It's okay. You're busy. That's fine. I don't know how to use the pressure washer, or I would.
You'd probably like it. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I guess. Valentine Roofing is having a huge March promotion. They're not only going to take care of you this year, they have next year covered too. So this month only, get a free year of roof maintenance when you purchase a new roof. Then enjoy seasonal checkups and professional care to keep your roof looking its best. I think that's awesome. Plus, they have flexible financing options. So payments as low as $159 a month if you decide to get a new roof in the month of March. Well, you can always take advantage of the flexible financing options. But if you do it in the month of March, you get that free year of roof maintenance, which has value in and of itself. So reach out to our friends at Valentine for an estimate. 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING. Roofing. Make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, let's get to our closing sanity check. I'll just stick to the plan. I was going to rant more about the government and just throwing tea in a harbor, but you all know how I feel. All right, so gas prices are ticking up because of, in part, of the war in Iran, although I believe if we're going to be honest about it, in Washington State, you also have to talk about the taxes and the carbon fees and all of that. But Whoopi Goldberg demands to know, Mr. President, where are the reserves?
We have reserves for this. Mm-hmm. We have reserves. Where are they?
Oil
where is our
oil? Reserve.
Yeah, for gas. When gas gets too much, they bust out the reserves and it brings the price down. Mm-hmm. So where are the reserves?
Where are the reserves? Well, Biden used them. This is old article from PBS. Biden administration releasing 1 million barrels of gasoline from reserves in a bid to lower prices. And of course, the reserves take years to replenish. So Whoopi, that's what happened to the reserves. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We truly do. Thank you for always having our back and our fight for a free press and our fight for all sorts of other things. And thanks for supporting our show. Honestly, at the end of the day, having the show and being able to have it is what matters most. And so, you know, whether we get access to the House floor this session or next, I mean, we're still going to continue to do what we're doing. And so we appreciate your support of the show. If you'd like to become a paid subscriber, you can sign up for $5 a month, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. And I'll digest that ruling from the court and we'll talk about it a little more in depth on tomorrow's show. See you then.